Thank you for inviting me. I'm going to spend a good part of this talk just describing how, actually illustrating in an example, how techniques from dynamical systems are used to analyze, to analyze models, actually models from computational neuroscience. And towards the end, I'll show you a problem I've been working on lately. An important question right now in neuroscience is relates actually to how rhythmic activity, meaning large-scale coherent activity, how it relates to cognition, to the sensory processing of information, to motor control. Computational neuroscientists approach this problem by making models of by making models and analyzing those models. Often those are informed by experimental data, and that makes them usually highly nonlinear and difficult to simulate and analyze. So that's where dynamical systems help, usually help reduce those models and also help extract the sometimes the essential information. When building a model, some people start really low level, basically starting with a neuron. The neuron, well, this is just to remind you real fast, it's essentially four distinct compartments. One would be the dendrites, where information from upstream cells comes to. The other part is the soma. The soma is where that information is integrated, and sometimes from there an action potential, an electrical activity, electrical event is generated, and that travels down the tube there, the axon, to end in the synapses and influence downstream neurons. This process is actually rather complicated, but to describe thematically, what happens is when there is sufficient input, sufficient stimulation on the soma or on the cell body in general, anyway, in this axon also sometimes, you are able to create the event because of sodium channels opening and sodium ions flowing inside the cell. That's happening very fast, on a very fast time scale. And there is a recovery process which corresponds to an outward current of potassium ions. That happens at a much slower time scale. This process was described very well in the landmark paper by Hodgkin and Huxley. Essentially, they considered the membrane to be an electrical circuit with variable conductances. And they derived these equations to describe the membrane potential. V here is the membrane potential. M, N, and H control the various ions involved, the various channels actually, and how available they are. Now, when you simulate this system of differential equation, which by the way is highly nonlinear, you get what is known as the action potential. Very fast upstroke and slow down. Will jump down slowly and then recover slowly to the initial state. Now, it's difficult to analyze this model, again, because of the nonlinearities. All the functions involved there are derived from experimental data, usually. They are very nonlinear. They are a combination of sigmoid functions and, powers of those also. So, this is a plot of V with respect to time. So, it's nicer if we can just reduce this system to something simpler. Let's say two equations, one of them being the fast process and the other one being the recovery one. That gives us the Maurice-Leclerc model, where V here is represents, in a way, the membrane potential, and W represents a variable which controls the recovery. Notice the epsilon. This is to say that this W evolves on a slower time scale in general than V. Important for So remaining here is the concept of null kind, I think everybody knows, but essentially it's a set of points such that the f function here is zero. It's a manifold generated by the V null kind is cubic shaped. That's an assumption we make with the Maurice-Lecar model. So that's what you see there. And above that curve, we have that f is positive below, f is, actually it's the other way around. F is positive below, and f is negative above the null kind, the V null kind. The W null kind corresponds to the other equation. This time you have to set the function g equal to zero, and you get that curve in red there. Again, we have to assume for the situation we are observing here, we have to assume that g function is positive above the g null kind, and it is actually wrong again. It's negative above the W null kind and positive below the W null kind. That gives us what we call an oscillatory cell when the two intersect this way. Okay. Now we are interested in reproducing the action potential on this system. We want to see what it's like. Okay. Essentially, this is what happened. We are here at the rest state of the cell. Okay. Some, let's say, an input comes which pushes the cell down. Then you see that. Again, this happens because it happens because of what we asked about VF, for instance. If F is positive below the W null kind, and basically these conditions make the left branch and the right branch, it makes them stable, set of stable fixed points for a certain differential equation. Okay. Now we have, this corresponds to the jump of the action potential. The dynamical system evolves slowly. That corresponds to the upper part of the action potential again. Then it again jumps down, carried by the dynamics that gives the downstroke, and then it evolves slowly back to where it was. And for this configuration, you should observe a periodic solution of the Maurice-Lecar equation. And that, in a way, corresponds to a neuron firing very regularly. There is another situation for the Maurice-Lecar model. It corresponds to what I would call an excitable cell. Just moving the W null kind up a little bit creates this time a fixed point which is stable. If you perturb this stable fixed point a little bit to the point, that's what I have as arrows there, to the point that this middle branch is crossed. In a way, this middle branch here plays the role of a threshold curve. If the middle branch is crossed, you are able to generate some kind of action potential as well. That's what I am describing here. Okay, this occurs very fast because of the dynamics of V. That's the stroke, again, same. And this time, this because of the presence of stable fixed point, you will observe a slow evolution towards the initial, well, the rest state. Now, assume we want to really extract more information. We want to compute the shape of this action potential, for instance. It's possible to do this by using fast-slow techniques. Fast-slow techniques, just kind of perturbation methods. Okay. Use the fact that, well, it's natural to start by setting epsilon equal zero and obtain all the fast dynamics. Obtain also what we call the critical manifold that corresponds to FVW equal zero. If you add to it the slow system, you obtain by rescaling time, okay, introducing the variable tau called epsilon t, and you get this system. What this tells you is how the system evolves in the dynamical system, evolves in the space defined by the manifold FVW equals zero, essentially in the cubic. So this will give us the slow evolution, what you saw up there.
Yeah, I want to ask one question.
Mm-hmm.
This modeling which you have done, electrical or mathematical modeling,
mm-hmm.
So which brain, molecules or the cells you have taken to represent the instance of the generator of electricity,
mm-hmm.
what are the physics, organic counterparts from which you have modeled? What brain molecules or the brain tissue?
These are cells. These are essentially neurons. And yeah.
What is the organic formula or the composition
Neurons, what's important as far as neurons are concerned and as far as the electrical activity is concerned is the composition of the extracellular milieu and the intracellular milieu, the ionic composition.
Uh-huh.
Essentially, sodium ions, potassium ions, chloride sometimes, and a vast panoply of neurotransmitters out there.
They generate electrical pulses.
Their gradients generate, in a way, electrical pulses, yeah. Okay. So, they went from Hodgkin-Huxley and just decided to simplify. Actually, it was a completely different system. They did it actually in an ad hoc way, but it ended up being very popular, actually. Yeah. They just combined some variables, did some sort of central manifold reduction by putting the really fast sodium current directly in the equation, replacing the M variable by M infinity in this case. Basically getting rid of this equation, saying there is something. No, there is not. It was done very well. Yeah, it could be. So essentially, you will get the slow dynamics by computing the left branch. And the knee where the jump occurs. On the left branch, you are able to, assume what we have here is a cubic, we can write the left branch as the graph of a certain function. Then we can input that in the slow system. That will give us how the variable W evolves in the slow time scale. Similarly, you do a similar study on the fast time scale and on the upper, which is when W is down and W is up, essentially. So, just to summarize the situation, I know it's very, it's not maybe very precise, but this essentially allows us to describe, to get an estimation of what the shape of the action potential is. Okay, we are assuming the dynamics, the upshoot and the downshoot, are occurring extremely fast, instantaneously, and we are essentially interested in what is happening during slow evolution. That we can capture by using fast slow analysis. If you want to do it more formally, the appropriate setting for it is really geometric singular perturbation theory. That makes it kind of more rigorous, but it's fairly complete, except if there is a loss of normal hyperbolicity. That happens also often in applications, I think. If you want to see more about it, you can. I think the papers by Fenichel are informative. Okay, so far we have a neuron and the model neuron here, Hodgkin-Huxley. The next step is to define a synapse. The synapse usually is modeled this way. Its influence is really through a current, a conductance Jsyn, a variable S, and we call it the synaptic variable, and essentially a gradient in potentials. The S variable is, the dynamics of the S variables are governed by the equation I wrote there. The big theta there is a Heaviside function. What it tells essentially is that when V is greater than a certain threshold, then the synaptic variable S is activated. It goes toward the value 1, okay? And when V is less than the value theta, the important dynamics becomes dS over dt is equal to minus beta S. That corresponds to a decay of the synaptic variable. So and the hyperpolarization will tend to activate the synapse. Yes, we will have to couple them. What I showed first was just a single neuron, yeah? The coupling is truly, definitely, only. So, but this will affect another neuron. So this V here will be inputted in this synapse S, but this S I'm showing here will influence another neuron, will be included in an equation for the other neuron. this here doesn't make it much more clear, but essentially, if you want to, this is the first step toward a network, an equation, a neuron within a network. They are essentially alpha and beta represent really the neurotransmitter, their kinetics. Yeah. Sometimes when the neurotransmitter, like a neurotransmitter like glutamate, acting really fast, you will have alpha being high, and if it is a GABA B, that slow neurotransmitter, this kind of representation wouldn't be valid. It's more complicated. You have slow; it occurs at a much slower time scale for a certain type of. It depends on the neurotransmitter. This is just a simplification, actually. But alpha and beta control the whether synapses are acting on a fast time scale or slow time scale. Now, the effect of the synapse on a cell, that's, I'm going to illustrate it real fast. What happens? If we add a synaptic variable here, like I did with the minus I sin here, I want to see what is happening in the in phase space. When you slowly increase the variable S, what happens is the cell goes from being oscillatory, essentially the 6 point in the middle branch, so we have an unstable 6 point, to the nucleon slowly decreasing with S. S is increasing, the nucleon is decreasing. Then you get stable 6 point now. So the effect of inhibition really is to create a stable 6 point. That's what it does. Or transform this. Of the next neuron, that's correct. Yeah. So what it is doing really is making the next neuron less and less. Basically, it is rising the firing threshold of the next neuron. It is inhibiting it from firing. Yeah, that's what it does. Not necessarily, but two. Yeah, it can happen. Three even, yeah. Three even can happen, and then very interesting dynamics can come, and it changes a lot of the properties of the cell. There is a lot of work on that, actually, in terms of bifurcations. You will get sometimes a saddle knot type bifurcation, sometimes half, just because it's, that changes a lot of the dynamics. But the interesting thing here is that instead of looking at the equations, we are just looking at the geometry. That's it. Now, this a basic network model. We have two cells, cell 1 and cell 2. Cell 1 and cell 2, they are coupled through the synapses, as you can see there. We assume both of them are oscillatory, and we try to follow them. Again, we can approximate the trajectories, estimate the trajectories using the fast-flow analysis I showed you. This time, though, we will not use null clients, but it will be null surfaces because of the S variable. Yeah, that's what I am talking about here, just how to compute, for instance, the slow evolution and the fast one. Using this analysis, Terman, Koppel, and Bose showed that there exists, for this coupled system here, you can find a synchronous solution. They are both inhibiting each other, yet there is a synchronous solution. Okay? They used, they showed it in a formal way, actually, because they considered the epsilon limit, epsilon equals zero, so it was formal. Yeah? They are actually clones, yeah, of each other, yeah. Identical, yeah. Yes. But what they also showed is that the synchronous solution is unstable. And the reason is if you perturb them slightly in such a way that one is slightly ahead of the other or slightly different point in phase space, you will observe this phenomenon here. Essentially, they will evolve slowly until one of them reaches the threshold curve. That one will jump up, the other one will immediately feel the inhibition and therefore will be stuck there. And that's what destroys the, that's what makes this solution unstable. in the case where you have fast synapses. If the synapses are acting fast, this is going to happen. If the synapses are acting slow, the ALS cell will feel it, will not feel the inhibition immediately, and it's more complicated. They actually showed that in that case, the solution, with slower synapses, more complicated GABA-B type synapses, you could observe stable solution, stable synchronous solution. Now, this brings me to what I have been working on lately, the Wang-Buzhaki model. It's a little bit like what I showed you, it's a little bit like Moyes-Lacquart, a little bit like Hodgkin-Huxley. Essentially, it's what we call a sodium current, a potassium current, and a leak. The leak is just some sort of, in a way, a fudge factor, but that's what people don't really know what is in there. You add this equations for the synapses and you get the network, a network model. Wang and Buzhaki used this to actually analyze or to study how networks of neurons were able to exhibit spontaneously highly synchronized states. If you just put together inhibitory neurons in a dish, they will be showing these gamma type oscillations, high frequency oscillations working all together that spontaneously emerge. And that has been also observed in vivo, and it seems to play an important role in hippocampal function and other functions as well. So they wanted to know what were the mechanisms underlying the emergence of such rhythms. And they built this model, which is actually quite popular, but I don't think anybody has analyzed it this way yet. What I want to do, because I have three variables here, I want to reduce this first. How much time do I have? About 3 minutes? Eight, that's good. Yeah, good. So I want to reduce this first, because three equations, noise. I came up with this reduction here. Essentially, what I'm saying is that the N variable representing sodium, sodium inactivation, the H variable representing potassium activation, those are occurring on a slow time scale, so I'm looking for a variable controlling both of them at the same time. And I come up with U such that, in a way, U replaces H and N together. And it seems to work fine. Okay, when I compare the original Wang-Buzhaki is the reduction, which is now two variables, I get, and when I check the conditions they had in their paper as far as what was to be respected to see emergence of those phenomena they just described, things look actually fine in there. What I'm showing in here is experimentally often draw these. These are frequency current curves, just how the frequency of a cell, the firing frequency of a cell varies with applied current. It seems to play an important role also in the computational properties of the cells. And what we have here is what is happening in phase space, actually the null client of the reduced model. Okay, so at this point I have reduced this model. The variables now are V, U, and S, the synapse. That's the network model now. And I simulate this for a large system, about 100 neurons all coupled together, globally coupled. Each neuron is coupled to each other, and they are all inhibiting each other. And there is some heterogeneity in there, okay? I gave each of them slightly different, there's some a bit of randomness in there, but more like heterogeneity. And different initial conditions. It seems when you run these, after a while, they still synchronize. Okay, we have neurons here. I mean, if the synchronous state was unstable, we shouldn't see this. These are neurons coupled through inhibition and which are synchronizing. Okay, so what is happening? Just before I showed you something like the Moyes-Lacquart model, and I showed you that it was unstable. Now this model is a bit different, but when you simulate it for 100 neurons and so, you do see a synchronization happening, and that's the same here, but it's just different, a different way of showing the same thing. I start again with just neurons at random. As time passes, they come together more and more. And essentially, I want to understand why that is the case. Yeah, so it's not fully synchronous, but I didn't run it for very, very long either. But and I don't even expect it to fully synchronize. You know, so that's the picture I showed you before. So I really I'm interested in knowing what is making these cells go together, talk together, etc. I look. One way to do it is to analyze just a system of two cells. That's the simplest way. And look at the bifurcation diagram. Here I have a symmetric system, and this is the bifurcation diagram. I can see that the synchronous state is stable up to a certain point. We have here period doubling bifurcation, and a lot of strange things happening. You find different solutions, actually, different possibilities. You have antiphase solutions. You have a synchronous solution. That's what we have here. You have suppressed solution, where whenever one neuron fires, the other one is suppressed. It tries to fire, but it can't. And another stranger type of solutions, where this is near the period doubling, though. But anyway. Now, again, what I'm trying to do is understand, using this two-cell system, what I want to do is understand how synchronization occurs. I will just explain briefly what I'm doing for that. I'm, in a way, building a map of it's some kind of Poincaré map. I'll start with the two cells very close to each other, and I'll follow the whole dynamics and then come back and show that what we obtain is a contraction, okay, under certain conditions. Very practically, to explain why the Maurice-Lecarre wasn't, in the Maurice-Lecarre case, we didn't have stability, but in this case, we have stability. It's actually a completely different system, because the center manifold now is on the W null cline, for one. It's not on the V null cline. The really slow dynamics happen here. This case, I'm showing you the suppressed case. This case here is the synchronous case. I will stop this. That's the main reason. Another important reason why this synchronous solution is stable, from what I see right now and from the few computations I've done, is the fact that the synapses actually do not act so fast, even though the value of alpha is rather high, it's about 6 in their model. The synapses don't act so fast, okay? And so the null cline doesn't get to catch up. This null cline here, the V null cline, which in a way acts as a separatrix, it doesn't get to catch up with the cell which is behind, and they can fire together. I'm sorry if I hope it conveyed a little bit of, you know, of this, but yeah, so that's what I've been doing lately. Thank you.